Hey Siri, play Social Geek Radio.
Okay, Social Geek Radio podcast coming up.
Hello, geeks, and welcome to Social Geek Radio. I'm Jack Munson, your host and social media consigliere. Today's episode is brought to you by Social Joey and Brand Journalists. Today's guest is Jeremy Miller. He's a brand strategist, best-selling author, and founder of the agency Sticky Business. His latest book is titled Brand New Name, and he joins us right now on Social Geek Radio. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Jack. It's a pleasure to be here. And one quick correction. The agency is Sticky Branding.
Sticky Branding. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we'll go back and fix that, or maybe we won't. Yeah. I can't believe I got the name of your branding and naming agency wrong. So,
well, we say Sticky Branding a lot. So we are helping make the business sticky by getting customers to come back again and again.
So let's start there. Give me a little bit of your background. What's your story on your own brand?
Sure. Well, I do not have a traditional path into branding and marketing. I actually started out my career in software sales. And in 2004, I joined my family's business. And I came on as a director of sales and marketing. And my parents ran an IT staffing company. And we didn't know it at the time, but our company was being disrupted by technology. LinkedIn was 2 years old. Facebook was a year old. Google was 5 years old. But they were already shifting the way people were buying recruiting services. And at the end of that first year, we had just a hell of a ride. And I remember that it got so bad at one point that I had my entire team, sales reps, doing pit time, which was 6 hours of cold calling a week per rep. And
fun sat down times in the boiler room.
It literally was. It felt like boiler room. It was like, we should get in at 7 a.m. so we can skip the gatekeeper and talk. Awful. And so, Jack, it was just at the end of that first year, I remember sitting down with my parents and saying, if this is what it's like to be in a family business, I can't do this. This is horrible.
Yeah. I'm in the wrong business, I think.
Wrong business, wrong everything. It was awful. And so my dad gave me the best advice I've ever got in my career, which was, it's not about the business we've built. It's about the business we're building. What are we going to build next? And it was that moment in time that gave me permission. So I took a step back and I looked at our business and I looked at our customers. And I looked at the market. And what I realized is I didn't have a sales problem like I originally thought. I had a branding problem. When people were going online, they couldn't tell us apart from anyone else. And being a sales guy, I really didn't know much about this world. So I started reading and consuming all the books I could get my hands on branding and putting the ideas into practice. The challenge was all the books I was reading were written for big companies like Apple and Nike. And I was a small business. I had a marketing budget, just not a vast one. So yeah, Trying to make this stuff work was really difficult. But long and short of it, we changed the company's name. We repositioned it from IT to sales and marketing. We adopted digital marketing even before it was called inbound marketing, back using Seth Godin's ideas of permission marketing and content marketing. And within 9 months, the business turned a corner, rocketed into growth mode. And even through the recession of 08, we didn't have any sales slippage. And it was that moment that opened my eyes up to the power of branding. And it just triggered a passion for me. And so I kept researching it and going deeper and deeper and deeper. And in 2013, I sold my parents' business and used the commission of that to write my first book, Sticky Branding, and do a large-scale research project with that. And all I've been doing since is continuing this evolution of how do small and mid-sized companies challenge the giants of their industry to grow remarkable businesses and brands.
And I think brands in that size category, a name can just make or break the brand. Is that right?
Oh, for sure. And I think we underestimate the power of names. I think names are the most important marketing asset for any business. And it's funny, we just think of a name as the company name, but it goes beyond that. Every product has a name. Every service has a name. Even your systems, when you give something a name, it suddenly has gravitas. It has meaning. And it's the companies that use names effectively that it's like lightning in a bottle. It you know a business by its name. You know a brand by its name. And the companies that name their products and services best definitely have a competitive advantage.
I'm going to tell you about my biggest pet peeve with names, and tell me if I'm way off base here. And then I want to dig into a little bit more on the process. Mm-hmm. But the thing that I just see more and more, especially in the past, let's say 15 years, with more and more online services and businesses and software companies everywhere, it feels like half of the companies have a name that was just, they took a few jargon type words and put them together. And now we've got, you know, the Corporation Services Incorporated, or, you know, it's Customer Service Inc., or, you know, it's just something that is so generic. And are they doing that because there's a strategy of you just want to fit in with everybody else, or is it just a lack of creativity or maybe a lack of expertise in speaking with someone like you?
Could be both. I think the first one is naming is exceptionally difficult, especially today. For the first time in human history, we are experiencing a naming drought, and we experience this. If you start naming something, the first thing you might do is go, oh, I got a cool name. You go look on GoDaddy and you realize someone else has it.
That's going to cost me $65,000. Yeah.
And that's if you're lucky. So that's heartbreaking. And so the hard part of naming today isn't coming up with great names. It's finding available names. And if this process gets frustrating enough, or you have decision by committee, then you can get into these awful worlds of compromise where you put some weird constructed name together or invent some name that is misspelled and awkward, or you compromise and come up with like the most blunt descriptive name ever. And that, I think, is the issue, is that in order to overcome the naming drought, and the only way to really get to brilliant names that are available is you got to have a good process.
So let's talk about that process. Where do we start?
Everything starts with strategy. What are you naming? So in my new book, Brand New Name, the first stage of a three-stage process is build a naming strategy. And the way I think of this is, you wouldn't build a house without a blueprint. You shouldn't name something without a naming strategy. And your naming strategy isn't very sophisticated, but it's getting clear on it. What are you naming? Who are you naming it for? How does it need to stand out in the market? Do you need to have it trademarked? If so, what regions? Do you need a domain name? What are the criteria for success? If you can get those guidelines dialed down, then that will save you so much heartache at the end when you have to select a name, because you're definitely not going to know it when you see it. You need those criteria at the front to be able to make smart decisions at the end.
How long does this planning and strategy process, or part of the process, usually take? Is this a short amount of time, or is this something that's going to go into a few months before you even, you know, get going on the selection?
So the whole project should take you no longer than 3 to 4 weeks.
Oh, wow. 3 to 4 weeks. Oh, that's fantastic. I had this horrible vision of everything's going to take 6 to 9 months.
No. So I think that there's two extremes. One is to try and do it too fast, like a one-day naming workshop. Mm-hmm. That's a recipe for compromise. The other is taking too long, and you got to launch a product, so stop wasting time. So the way the Brand New Name works is, week one, build a naming strategy. So you put all your pieces together, you get your ideas dialed down. And also in that week, you want to assemble what we call a sprint team. And the way Brand New Name works is through the power of employee co-creation. Inside every organization, just immense creative potential. So rather than hiring an agency, what I recommend is to get all of your employees or your team or partners involved in this. And if you can get 5, 10, or even 100 people involved, you can generate a ton of ideas.
You know what I really like about that is, first, you're going to save a ton of money for not outsourcing that to someone else, right? Because you're going to have employees working on it. But especially if you've got some employees who, you know, especially in this day and age of having a hard time finding great talent, and you want to keep people for a long period of time, and you really want them to feel ownership, that's the greatest thing ever for an employee to be involved with, you know, renaming the company or naming a new product or service.
And I think that it's 100% right, Jack. It's the, when in most organizations, people overlook their employees and their creative abilities. They think someone's in customer service, somebody's in manufacturing, someone's the receptionist. They don't have the ideas that we need for this. But the reality is they do. They know the business, they know the customers. And if you can connect them to why you're doing what you're doing, not only will they give you great ideas, they will feel a sense of ownership and accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And I have seen massive culture shifts happen because for the first time ever, employees are asked to work on the business. And it is fun, it's encouraging. And if you gamify it and make it a big deal, it's a big opportunity to really light up your culture.
Yeah. And I love that ownership feeling that the employees have, and, you know, just keeping it as a team building exercise as well, I would assume, right?
For sure. And so the way the process works is over 5 days, you get yourself and your team to generate as many ideas as you can in 5 days. And so there's a daily exercise and a quota, 5 good names per person per day.
Wow.
And it creates exponential results. I did a project recently with a small business looking to change their company name, and they had 20 people involved in the naming sprint, and they generated 1,043 names in 5 days.
Wow. That's productive.
Exactly. And here's the crazy part. Of that list, there was only 36 duplicates.
Wow. That's very impressive. Let's talk a little bit more about the team on this sprint. Mm-hmm. Are there particular types of people that you want to get? Like, do you want, you know, somebody with some leadership qualities and then someone else who's a great writer? And then, you know, are there traits that you look for, or is it more random in just taking a group of smart people?
It's a bit more random. So a sprint team is typically anywhere from 3 to 10 people. And then you can also extend this to include all of the employees and go much larger. But the core is that 3 to 10 people. In that team, the first thing to have is the decision maker. Whoever is picking the name, whether it's the business owner, the president, whoever the final decision maker is, they got to be involved in this from the start because they got to feel the pain. And projects go off the rails when an agency or a team shows up to the owner and says, here's your names. And they're like, well, show me another.
It's like a bad client you're going into pitch. Yeah. Do you have any more ideas?
Exactly. So the way we stem that is the decider, whoever the final decision maker is involved at all stages. Doesn't have to mean they have to be 100% engaged, but they got to go through the whole process. We also assign a champion, which is the project manager. That's the person that's helping to get everybody aligned and managing things forward. After that, it's really open-ended. What you're looking for are people that are curious, open-minded, and willing to contribute their ideas. Ideally, they should know the business, so they should be someone inside the organization, but they don't have to be an executive. And often the best ideas are coming from the people that are really far away from it. So, like, we'll give you an example. I worked with a restaurant group a year or so ago, and they were changing their name, and the idea that came for the final selection came from a cook in one of the restaurants.
Well, who better, really, right? I mean, that's the person who's so involved in the food and actually making the food for the customer. That's a great story.
Right. What the benefit was is they knew the business. This is a company with third generation family business, and they were looking for an idea that hit their legacy. And the idea they landed on was E3, which was the seasoning spice inside of all of their restaurant chains. Mm. And this was named after Earl Owens, who was the executive chef going back to the 1980s. And Earl was this larger than life character. If the Iron Chef was on back then, he would have been on there. But it was an internal phrase an internal name that nobody really paid all that attention to, but everyone knew what it was, and it became the symbol of excellence that was the perfect name for what they were trying to do.
What I love about that too is, as someone who might be marketing that restaurant or as the sales guy who's out there pitching it to someone, it's a great story that you can tell for partners and potential customers in that when someone says, oh, where'd you come up with this E3 name? Great story. One of our chefs actually named that. So mm-hmm. yeah, I love that idea. Let's talk a little bit more about that selection process. Mm-hmm. So there's one decision maker, right? You can't have a committee of decision makers. You have to have one person. Is that correct?
Yeah, there's got to always be a final decision maker. Otherwise, it goes into paralysis. But the way the sprint, so I think the selection phase is quite possibly the most critical part of naming and where most naming projects fail. You could go online for a few hundred dollars, not even even less than $100. You can go crowdsource and get 1,000 names. But then you're left with this big list and you're like, what do I do with this? And most naming projects fail with that idea that I'll know it when I see it. And the reality is you never will. And so what we provide in the book is, or what I provide in the book is a set of exercises to reduce your shortlist, eliminate the non-starters, the names you can't use because of trademark or domain issues, and then a name score, which is an analytical survey that connects to the strategy, and some market testing. And the sprint team will go through and do all these exercises, and they will make a recommendation to the decider. And they say, we believe it's this name or these two names. But at the end of the day, someone's got to choose.
So can you give me some examples of some more names? I love the E3 name. Are there some more names of some companies you've worked with, or even maybe some other examples from the book of other companies that just really knocked it out of the park with the name right off the bat?
Sure. This is what I love is I get these calls and emails and messages on social all the time of someone saying, I got your book and I just picked my name. And the joy they have is amazing. Uh-huh. And one of the stories I really love is a publisher changed their name. So they were, the company was originally LifeTree, and they were a hybrid book publisher. And so they were working primarily with business authors to create their books. And they went through the naming sprint, and they came to the end, and they had two names, and they chose Wonderwell. And the creative on it's brilliant, but it was that word Wonderwell. There's something about it, especially from an author perspective, mm-hmm. that it sparks what you're trying to create. It looks great on the spine of a book, and it really does distinguish them from other hybrid publishers. But LifeTree was also problematic. It was being associated with New Age and religious connotations, which is not what they were.
Got it. So, and I love the fact that it's books and it has the word wonder in it. I mean, there's a passion word right there in the beginning of the name.
For sure. Yeah. And the most important part for me in that too was the business owner, she just said, I love this. This speaks to what I want to build. And isn't that, as an entrepreneur, what you really want is that personal connection that I am proud of my business and I am proud of the name I chose. And that starts to really drive into the branding because you've taken a point of pride in what you're creating.
Yeah. And if she's feeling that much emotion over it, then her readers and customers and everyone else will probably feel some sort of emotion over that name as well.
100%. If you think, and if you go back to your pet peeve at the beginning, if you called yourself the American hybrid publishing company,
yeah,
there's no pride there.
Boy, there's a lot of passion there. Oh, gee, you're a publishing company? No kidding, right? Mm-hmm. I see you have books. I get it. and let's talk about the other extreme on the naming spectrum. Is there a danger of being, you know, too cute or too clever or trying too hard to like make some sort of joke or something, you know, inside the name? Do you see that happen a lot?
I don't see it happen a lot because it's actually really hard to do. But you definitely can go over the top. I think the key thing I have a controversial point of view on this. I think I will say, and I say it in the book, there is no such thing as bad names, just bad strategies. And someone will like, well, what about XYZ name? And I always go back down to the selection side of things. Why would you call your company that if it's inappropriate for the product, the market, or your audience? You made a bad strategic decision. Mm-hmm. And so the metaphor I might use is take the name Purple Taco. It might be great for a food truck, but you're definitely not going to call a senior living center that.
Right. Right.
And so can you be too cutesy? Probably not. I would actually push to, if you could go that route to be whimsical or unique, do it. Take the example, Big Ass Fans. You know exactly what they do.
Yeah.
That's a pretty bold name as well.
Love that. Let's talk about anything else that you're working on right now. I love the idea of always thinking about not the business that you've worked on, but what you're working on next. Any big projects or anything taking you or the agency sort of to the next level in the next year or so?
Well, the big thing for us is, so once you have a name, what do you do and grow your brand? And the thing I think we are all paying attention to is coronavirus and an imminent possible recession and what's going on. And so the big service and topic for us right now is, how do you recession-proof your business? And the answer is with a very effective marketing strategy and a strong brand. And so the work that we're doing day in and day out with our clients is very much on how do you proactively and aggressively go after the next set of customers that are going to grow your business? Because if you rest on your hands or hunker down right now in this moment of panic, I think those are the companies that are going to feel the most pain from what's happening right now.
I like that a lot, because I think there is this inclination by some companies to just say, it's going to be a really tough month or tough 6 months or whatever, so let's just not do anything. You know, let's just cut back on everything, save as much money as possible. And you know, I think the real danger there isn't just what's going to happen over the next few months, because it's going to be lousy for everybody. Let's just, you know, let's just admit that. But what you're really killing is next year and the year after that, because you're not planting those seeds or you know, developing the business that you want to be in a year from now. So glad to hear that. Yeah. Jeremy, we're going to be back in just a minute with some contact information. But first, one quick note. We talk frequently on this podcast about using digital marketing for franchise lead generation. And there's no one who does that better than brand journalists. I've known Thomas and his crew for about a decade now, and they're the most experienced and successful franchise development marketing. They've grown over 170 franchise brands, and they've helped Fran Dev Pros recruit over 10,000 franchise owners. And they do it with my favorite method, great storytelling on websites and targeted digital marketing. So if you need a little help growing an emerging brand, or you want to breathe some life back into an old legacy brand, or you just want to rise above the noise, talk to brand journalists. They'll give you a free audit of your website and your Fran Dev marketing. Check them out at brandjournalists.com. Jeremy Miller, thanks so much for joining me today. Can't wait to dive deeper into the book and learn a little bit more about you and your crew. If our listeners want to learn some more, where can they reach out to you with questions or get some more information?
Well, thanks, Jack. It's been such a pleasure. Well, the best way to connect, if you Google Sticky Branding, you will find me. The website, stickybranding.com, and I'm on all the social networks at Sticky Branding. And I'd love to connect. If someone's got a question, if you have an idea or you want to reach out, please do. And also, the books are available on Amazon, both our brand new name and Sticky Branding.
Awesome. And we'll have links to all of those places at socialgeekradio.com. Jeremy, thanks so much for being here today, and we will talk with you soon down the road.
Thanks, Jack. Such a pleasure.
And thanks to everyone for listening to Social Geek Radio, copyright 2020, Social Geek Enterprises, Inc.